joined now by Oscar Chalupski, who I admire hugely, who provides huge inspiration for me on LinkedIn. Whenever I think I'm having a bad day, I just dip into your LinkedIn feed. And I'm sure many people out there take the same encouragement from your journey. So where do you want to start today with your journey? You're going to tell the story.
Thank you, Bronwyn. Thank you very much for having us as a guest. I think it all started on the 25th of November. It's actually five days ago, whenever it is, on the 25th of November, 2019, when I had this terrible pain in my back. And the reason why it's the 25th of November, 2019, because on the 26th of November, 2019, was our wife's 60th birthday. And I organized a surprise party in the Douro Valley in Portugal. The only thing she got was a surprise to say, no, you've got cancer and you've got 6 months to live. I mean, when you get that, it's like it's a big shock. But you see, the difference between where I react and Claire reacted is that I was shocked and I probably shed a tear or two. My wife was very upset. And then I stopped after like 1 minute of crying and said, okay, listen, at the time I was 56 years old. I said, listen, what I've done in my 56 years, most people take two or three lifetimes to do. So you've got to live every life. And I think that's where you change. And you've got to realize that whatever you're doing today is going to help you in the future. You never know. You never know. I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, like, as you know, I do a lot of sport. And one of my biggest wins was age 49, winning my 12th world title at age 49. And again, I did things differently to everybody else because at 49, I couldn't do one pull-up. The guy came first, came second and third and fourth. They can do thousands. So you have to think differently. It's like doing this in business and family. You've got to think differently if you're going to beat a beast that is so much better than you. You've got to think differently and do different ways. And I think that's where it all started, to realize that everybody's got it in them. You've got it and everybody's got it and you've got it there, but you've got to just think. And I always talk about, and we all talk about gut feel. You know, the reason why it's called gut feel, it's because it comes from here. It comes from the heart. You've got to find a different way. And that's what I did. And that's what I have been doing. I mean, not many people would fast for 21 days. I mean, exactly 1 year ago to this day, they also gave me 1 or 2 days and said, bring the family. I said, no, I'm not ready to go anywhere. And they tried all the medicines. And I said, okay, I'm going to try my medicine, which is I'm going to fast for 21 days. And people think I'm crazy. But I mean, I'm here to tell the story because I thought differently again. And you've got to... And the other thing I like to say to everybody is that we all are getting older. We agree on that. But we should all be getting wiser because we should be educating ourselves, not just read up and listen and learn.
So I want to go back to the sport aspect. And of course, you are a world champion sportsman. So when you say you won the Molokai Challenge, right, at the age 49, you're actually a 12-time winner of the Molokai Challenge. I want you to just take us through that mental challenge in terms of you do a lot of coaching of sports people in terms of endurance and resilience and not giving up. And we'll talk about your book in a little while. But talk to me about the sporting side.
Yeah, so that's where it all starts, you know, and this is what life's all about, is doing the hard yards before and doing things differently. So understand, in 1983, at the age of 20, when I raced my first world title in racing against a guy called Grant Kenny, who was a similar age, he'd won 4 years in a row. So understand this. So straight away, I'm in the back for this guy's won 4 years in a row. How do I beat this guy from Australia? And the first thing you got to learn is you got to know that people that have come before you, you've got to learn from them first and then take all the information from them and then try and beat them. And that's what I did the very first time out. So the very first time out, I went neck and neck with him, and when I could see the finish line, because the Molokai is between two islands, so when I could see the finish line, I said, okay, I'm going to go for it because I've done my homework, and that's the most important thing. Yes, winning the race is all, but you've got to do the homework. You've got to do the hard yards. You've got to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and again, my sport, and like most people that are listening here, haven't got full-time sportsmen. They are trying to balance family life, home life, exercise, trying to make the boss happy. And that's what life's about, is getting that balance. But you've got to think a bit clever. So when I'll take you back to the 12th Molokai. So the first one was, I actually won by a long way, by something like 15 minutes, and broke the record by 14 minutes and beat Grant Kenny. So it was relatively easy because I was young and I was fast. But when you get to age 49 and you set the goal to say, okay, now I want to win this race, how do I do it? You've got to do things differently. So I was training in Durban, and in the middle of summer, I was wearing a full wetsuit. So it was hellish hot because I know when I'm going across the channel, it's going to be hot. Then I just trained with other people, and I put a weight in it. Weight in my serves, 10-kilogram lead weight. I never forget, from Sydney Lazarus, from non-ferrous metal, another one of your clients. So I put this lead weight, so it made it harder. And then I worked out about, this is in 2012, about the keto diet, about losing. So I stopped drinking. I lose 25 kilograms of weight, because these are things you have to do. I've got to do that. And in the race itself, I actually didn't eat or drink anything for 3.5 hours. And people say, are you crazy? I say, no, I'm not crazy. I've studied this, is that when you drink anything or eat anything, your body has to use energy to digest it and dissolve the water and digest. And it takes the power away from your muscles that I needed to beat these guys. And over 3 hours, 23 minutes, the guy who came second, who was Olympic gold medalist, Clint Robinson, I beat him by 12 seconds. So you can imagine. And as I say, this guy doesn't even drink. He's like a beast. And he can do thousands of pull-ups and thousands of push-ups. I can do none of those, but I use my brain, and I'm educated myself reading books from Shackleton and reading financial books. You don't have to just read medical books. You read all different things, and you just take in that information, and it's up to you to use it and test it. And that's what I did.
No Retreat, No Surrender, the title of your book. And it is obviously not only about your sporting achievements, but also about your position as a cancer warrior, right? Talk to me about the book and where you are right now. I suppose, Oscar, also, I mean, 5 days ago, you read your last rites. I was in your LinkedIn profile, and I was, again, you know, just, I'm inspired by your resilience. So talk to me about the book.
So how the book came around. So once I'd got this news that I've got cancer, I said, okay, I phoned up my friend Graham Spence, who also wrote the book called Elephant Whisperer. And I said, Graham, I think I'm going to write a book. The reason is I've got cancer. And of course, he cried and said, no, you're joking. I said, no, I've got, but that's fine. We've got enough time. We've got 6 months. He said, no, the problem that I have with this, I'm on a deadline of 4 months. We've only got 2 months. Then we'll write it in 2 months. But no, cancer's going to beat me in 6 months anyway, I told him. So, and I said, I want this book to be different. The most important thing about a book is, I don't want people to say, oh, this is how you did. I wanted to teach people how to fight adversity. And that's how the book came about. So it took me 2 years to write, and everything was about the end of every chapter, giving life lessons, say, listen, these are the mistakes I've made and these are the mistakes I haven't. And I wanted to include everything, business, family, health, everything that you need in life to fight adversity, because we're all going to go through it, Bronwyn. I mean, your listeners are going to go through it, and I have it every day, people having problem. And I really am proud of this book, that I get people saying, you saved my life. I was going to commit suicide, and I've read your book, and I think it's not all bad. And I was struggling. I was giving up hope, and now I'm doing it. And, you know, and again, even the people that go to work and they think, oh, you know, today I've got a thing. I've had a bad night last night. I'm not going to go to work with. And you just read a page, and that's what I did, and that's what you want to do. And that's the kind of thing I'm saying. I'm not only from me, from everybody. You can learn from somebody, and I try and make it very in depth, and again, it's a tough call. And my wife said, oh, don't you feel bad that every day you've got a person saying, like, sort of airing his washings, and listen, I'm struggling. How can I help? And I make an effort every single day to reach out to these people to try and help them. And I'm not a doctor, but I've been through everything, and I do everything differently, and I seem to be able to beat it. Now this time, the same thing. The doctor gave me no chance. But I said, listen, look at the numbers. There's a 0.1% increase there. And they said, your folate's down. I couldn't fly back to South Africa. I didn't want to die in Portugal. I thought, I know lots of people here. And I said, okay, let's do this. We'll fast all the time. So every day I only ate it once a day. And then I made sure I ate folates to get my white blood cells up, because I couldn't fly until my white blood cells were 2. They need to be 20 before I could fly. So I've just slowly eked it out, you know. And again, fighting pain. You know, I knew from past experience that if you have a hot water bottle on the pain, because I had total kidney failure. They said, no, you'll never recover from that. I said, okay, watch me. And drank lots of water. So all these little things you pick up along the way from strange and arbitrary people, but people that have done it, and it's up to you to follow it and learn from them. And that's what I did. So the book does say, and it goes up to a year and a half ago. So obviously everybody's saying, oh, write another book. And my author's saying, no, we've got to first sell a lot of books, you know. And we've sold a lot of books. But you still need a big boost to make money, because the book selling is not about making money. You make, I think, 8% of the 340, so you make like 12 or 20 Rand per book. So you have to sell millions.
We can't tell your story, or I certainly can't interview you without asking about your biggest supporter, your warrior, and that is your wife, Claire. You've mentioned her in this discussion already. Talk to me about Claire and what she has been to you through this journey.
No, I mean, that is the most, it's the toughest job for the people that are around people that are having cancer, because you feeding off them and they feeding off you. So if you go down one little bit, you can just see your wife and your family. I mean, Claire, the sacrifices she made, I mean, obviously she takes it far worse than me, like when it happened. And then when I was in hospital, she sat next to me because I had a bed, but there was no spare. So she's on the 21-day fast, she sat in a chair for 21 days because I was so weak to go to the toilet. And she became like my nurse, and she still is. I mean, she's there to support. And again, you don't want pity from your people. You just want support and encouragement. And she has been phenomenal. I mean, the sacrifices she's made. I mean, I was going to fly next week, and then suddenly I was in London, and she had to nurse me in the hospital and in the hotel for 2 days because I couldn't get up. And I said, I'm getting up, and I would get up, but I couldn't play golf. I did my talk. So, and she was always there, because you just go down so fast and you have to have somebody there. So she's been a nurse without being a qualified nurse. She's probably the best nurse you could ever have. And you need that in life. You need support, just like you are interviewing now. You know, from LinkedIn, the people, the encouragement I get is so important, and it's important for her. She reads all the posts and feels upbeat. And she always does say that, you know, I never think Oscar's got cancer, but he never complains, you know. So, and that's also important. So the more you give, the more you get back from other people. And the support is important. I mean, that's when I first had it. My doctor friend who gave me the news, I got 6 months, said, listen, surround yourself with support and family, because that is going to get you through. Because that mental toughness that you've got is sort of tenfold stronger if you've got the correct support. And Claire has been amazing, you know. So she keeps, like when I'm on my deathbed, she, should I tell the kids? And she decides, and I always say, don't worry, I'm not going to die so soon, you know.
Talk to me about the different treatments that you've embarked on. If I'm correct, this last treatment you attribute to Stuart Lowe, who recently passed. Is that correct?
Correct. So what happened was, with the minute I got it, I contacted Stuart Lowe, because he was 5 years ahead of me with all his treatments. So what happens when you get multiple myeloma? It's incurable cancer, bone marrow cancer. So first thing you have is a bone marrow transplant, which you have, and they try and kill you, and then they give you bone marrow, and then it works. And then because it's incurable, and mine is very aggressive, I've never been off chemo. So what happened was, in November last year, so they tried a thing called Velcade, and it stopped working. And that's when I did the 21-day fast. And then my doctors in South Africa said, listen, we've got nothing for you. So then I went to Portugal, and they said, okay, we actually got nothing. But it's funny enough, there's a trial, two drugs. Teclistamab and cafilzomib, and it's a sort of a lottery which one you get. So I got cafilzomib, which is the one I didn't really want, but they said it works, and it costs 600,000 a month for the government. 600,000, that's how much it was, and it's supposed to last, the trial was supposed to last 8 years. I said, oh, that's very fantastic, 8 years, I'll be very happy to last that long. And then after 4.5 months, it stopped, and it stopped immediately, and that's when it stopped. And I'd already been chatting to Stuart Lowe to say, hey, to kiss the maps, the stuff to get. So then when it stopped working, straight away, I was speaking to Stuart every day. And I'll never forget, my sister-in-law went to go and see him 2 weeks before he bought, he said, "Oh, I can't wait for Oscar," because I was supporting him because I knew he was fighting a battle, and he was supporting me, telling me what I should do and how I should do it, the crowdfunding and all that. And I did everything that he told me what to do, and he had the disclistamab, which worked. He says, "Listen, I went on it for a year. It had no side effect. It worked fantastically well for a year." And I said, "I'm very happy for it to work for a year." And he died 3 days before I was able to see him. And again, he died because it's just not there quick enough, the drug. And it's a terrible disease because it's so expensive. So now the teclistamab that I got from him is $250,000 a month. And with Discovery, the co-payment is about between $120,000 and $60,000 a month. And the first dose I'll get, and again, someone is a cash 22. This medical thing is not like straight, it's like a gamble. So now it's the strangest thing. My pathologist, my hematologist cannot understand that I'm on a Mickey Mouse drug that costs 100 rand a month and it's working. Now, do I stop and go into other drug we don't even know it works? And now I'm sitting there and we're actually making this decision right now. And that's what happens in life. You got to make these decisions and you got to say, okay, you got to weigh up all these facts. So now this drug's working. My numbers are unbelievable. I sent an email to the doctor in Portugal and said, "I'll never see you again. You will be dead next week." And he's saying, "It's fantastic." He says, "Never heard of this." And then another doctor of mine in Australia, he said, "No, have you been having transfer?" I said, "No, I've had no transfer." I said, "I've just had the brain transfusion. I've just kept positive and made this cancer just sort of disappear for a while. Not disappear, but get much less." And again, nobody can explain why. Yes, I do a few alternatives. I do fenbendazole, which is like a animal thing, and I do ivermectin. I mean, you try everything. You've got to try everything. I mean, understand you will go, I'll go the modern proper medicine, and then I do alternatives. You've got to do it, and you've got to try everything. You don't know what to do. And then I've got all the mushrooms as well.
So an underpin to your regime is your exercise, and notably, you can swim, you can paddle, but nothing that could risk breaking one of your bones, so to speak, right? Because of the impact of the medication. That resilience that you get from the continued exercise, do you attribute a lot of your ability to navigate the situation to exercise?
Absolutely. I think exercises, they don't actually realize how important it is. And I never stop. When I was in hospital in Portugal, I said, "I'm going to walk up and down." And they stopped me walking up and I said, "Listen, I'm going to walk out this hospital." So they locked all the hospital doors. They wouldn't let me out. How's that? So, and I said, "This is important because even if I'm walking up the passes, up and down, you've got to keep moving." I mean, I was in such a bad way. I'd get up off a seat and then I'd wobble, but I would not sit down again, and I'd just go and walk 2 or 3 kilometers every single day. And the doctor says, "How can you even walk?" I said, "No, because if you walk, your body's got to work it out. You've got to put your body under stress." And that's what life's all about, is that in those tough times, you've got to get up and go. You know, you've got to make decisions, whether you're in financial service, whether you're fighting cancer, whether you're having family issues, you've got to get up and go. And that's, you just got to start. And then once you do it, you get better. And I spent my life doing it and pushing myself to the limit. So yes, you feel bad, but the consequences and the benefits outweigh everything, you know. And I think you've got to realize diets and exercise are one of the most important things, and just cut out the stress. If you can't do anything, as you know, the best pill I ever learned about taking is to, if you're worrying, which 95% of your customers are worrying, "Oh, is Bitcoin going up or down?" Or they worry. And I say, "Okay, this is the best pill you get. You go in the toilet, lock the toilet, and worry as much as you like and see if anything changes. Nothing will change. You come out the toilet and realize, hey, nothing's changing. Unless you can do something about it, don't even worry. It shouldn't be a word in the dictionary." And again, one of those things, and my wife knows, because she does the worrying for me, you know, my son does the worrying for me, but I will never worry. If you can't do anything like that, don't do it. But if you can do it now, and then it's done. You know, and again, I think that's life.
You reference international trips a lot. So you've mentioned Portugal in our discussion now. Is this part of your treatment? I often wonder when I read about it, what the international side of things or how that ties into your story.
Yeah, so my story is that I actually went and started a company. I was the main guy at a company called Nello Surfski, which was in Portugal. But I kept on doing talks around the world. So, and funny enough, as it worked out, that I had talks every week in South Africa. So I flew all the way back to South Africa, did the talk, and had to fly back to Portugal to get a whole day of treatment. So that's why I was flying around. And then I've always been flying. I mean, I always say in 1979, I started my travel and I never stopped since 1979. I was a 16-year-old and I've traveled around the world all the time, mainly for sport and teaching and things. And I love travel. And people, that's another thing. People say, oh, no, you know, flying, for me, I actually love it because I made it so that I actually love it. I make sure how to travel. And if it takes me a little bit longer, I just make sure I'm enjoying life and enjoying travel. And it's the same thing now. And when you on your deathbed, then you like change your priorities. You know, the material things don't actually mean too much when you're in a pound box. And so I make my travel easy. I always use one airline so they look after you. And those are the kind of things you trick. And I know how I'm going to spend in the business class lounge and what I'm going to do and what I'm going to eat. And I make it seem that so it becomes a journey and sort of a holiday going traveling as opposed to a band of traveling. I have no problem traveling because I've done it so often. I just do it the right way. And I think that's what everybody got.
The funding of sorry, I interrupted you there. Continue.
No problem. No, so what I'm saying is that you've got to make it work for you financially and so it's seamless. And that's what life's about again, is trying to make things that are terrible, make them good. So then they actually enjoy doing it and becomes not a bind, you know. And so many people make decisions because of finances and not because of passion and drive, you know.
Talk to me about the funding side, because I'm sure there are a lot of people who are watching this who are having a very real challenge when it comes to medical treatment for cancer. You spoke about the crowdfunding that Stuart Lowe gave you advice on. How do you navigate the costs involved? I mean, the numbers that you talk about are eye-watering.
No, they are ridiculous. And I feel so sorry for a lot of people. And I can't help everybody. So a part of my book is royalties. It goes to a company called Campaigning for Canvas, an NGO run by Lauren Petroius, doing a fantastic job. And I knew this was going to happen because, funny enough, my treatment is going to cost, as I say, between $150 and $250 a month. I mean, not many people can afford that. And then the caveat, the thing at the end is a thing called CAR-T. At the moment, CAR-T costs me $16 million. So that's a lot of money. And that's buying me, hopefully, by the time, the longer I can last, the longer the CAR-T will work. And some people have the CAR-T that actually cures them. It cures leukemia and lymphoma and things, but not curing multiple myeloma. But the longer I can last, I'm sure the longer, the quicker they're going to get to a cure. So that's my goal in life, is to do that. But crowdfunding is the thing. And as I started a crowdfunding last week, and it was unbelievable. I mean, I just put 900 people of my close friends. I mean, I've got 8,000 people on my phone, but 900 of my close friends. And the outpouring was out of this world. I mean, I raised the telephone numbers because, again, it's because what I'd given people, they're just giving back. And that's what life's about, is that give more and you'll get back much more. And that's what happened. And it really happened out of the ordinary. And again, I made sure. And that's the secret about crowdfunding. It's got nothing to do with me. I've got a proper CA, a guy called Simon Downs from Shaven Gibson, chairman of Shaven Gibson, and he looks after the funds and he doesn't let 1 cent go. It only goes to medical expenses because it's tough. And you've got so many other people saying, oh, no, I need money for this and help me. And yes, I try and help, but I mean, that's what Campaigning for Cancer is. You're giving it to a bigger cause, and I'm going to carry on that Stuart Lowe's legacy, and try and raise $200 million in capital, and then we'll live off the interest to help other people. Because if you haven't got money, you die, and it's a terrible thing. I mean, just talking about it makes you feel so sad for so many people.
So, Oscar, just in terms of the last question, is where to from here? As I said, just as we started the conversation, 5 days ago, they read you your last rites, and that's happened a couple of times over in your cancer journey. But perhaps just bring us on board to where to from here.
Well, I mean, the end of the day, I'm going to be fighting. So this new drug, we don't know whether we should start it or not, because this Mickey Mouse drug I'm on now actually is keeping me alive, and I'm doing quite well. As you see, I've got some energy, and I feel good. And if it wasn't for this scar in my, this all, I've got 20 stitches here from skin cancer getting taken out, I'd be swimming again, but I'm walking, so I can't swim, so can't get this wet. So I'm still doing my exercise. I'm enjoying my golf. A golf will start soon, as soon as the stitches and all heal. And so I'm going to keep on pressing forward, and then hopefully find a cure. That's the ultimate thing to do. And now, for the first time, I've come back to South Africa and living back here, and I've left my place in Portugal, our Airbnb, and I'm going to concentrate on the business that I started 15 years. Because when I started Citadel, the same guys, we started a company called New Mobile, NU Mobile, and I'm going to give it 100% of my time, because I've normally given it like 50 to 40%, now I'm going to 100%. And I'm going to grow that business big enough in the year so that I can pay that 16 million. And again, that's the kind of goal you need to set. I said, listen, I need 16 million. The only way I'm going to get 16 million is take this company from a small company to a huge company, and I know I can do it, because and I'm going to make a plan, and I'm going to do it. That's my goal, is to make this company worth billions, so that I've got enough money to pay for my treatment with the help of other people and with the help of myself as well. So you'd help yourself.
Oscar, thank you so much for your time. It's been such a privilege engaging with you. As I said, I'm a huge supporter, follow your story all the time, and I'm sure that many people in the business community are going to find your story inspiring. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Pran. I really appreciate your time, and I love being on.